This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Sharmila Ganesan and Lee Chui Lin. Tonight, worries that children are becoming more exposed to sexual crimes online that don't involve physical contact.
So we'll be looking into this and discussing what's caused it, how it can be prevented. And authorities are pointing out that children are getting more access to the internet, but not necessarily enough guidance on what should and shouldn't be shared.
So tell us, how do you cultivate strong boundaries online and how can we help children do that? You can call 7733 2900, send us a voice note or WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:08, and today's story comes from statements made by the statements that came out of the Sexual Women and Child Investigation Division of the Royal Malaysia Police. And basically, they're saying that children are becoming more exposed to sexual crimes that don't involve physical contact, mainly because they now have easy access to smartphones and the internet.
There have been some headlines recently, right, about child pornography. I think the Ministry of Women and Family have also commented on this. So the latest now, Siti Kamsiah Hassan, the Principal Assistant Director of the division, said that they have been getting regular reports on sexual crimes involving child pornography, explaining to Bernama that online predators will establish a special relationship with victims and then ask for nude photos and videos. And then once the victims decide that they don't want to continue the relationship, the photos and videos are then spread by the predator, which is a practice that in other terms is revenge porn, right? And she said that this crime of sharing, grooming and asking for nude photos and videos have become a trend. And to the point that we raised earlier, one of the things that she also discussed was parents needing to equip themselves with knowledge about safety when socializing or making friends so that they can advise and prevent their children from becoming victims of crime. Further saying, we need to teach children social etiquette, social boundaries, what can be shared, what cannot be shared, such as personal matters and their bodies. Monitoring by parents is important and the children themselves must have self-control.
So there's so much there, right? Because first, we look at the fact that the internet devices are so ubiquitous and manifest in so many different ways. It doesn't even have to be for fun. Children do their homework with devices. Children go on the internet to be able to study, to take classes in the last 2 years. And so I think on the one hand, it's become such a common thing that the idea of monitoring, the idea of setting guidelines can be quite complex. And then you add in the factor of contact with strangers, contact with people outside of your regular social circle. I can understand why this is so fraught and difficult.
Yeah, and also, are we acknowledging enough the insidiousness of grooming? Because grooming might include saying, it's nice that we're friends. I'd like it to just be the two of us. Don't tell your parents. And, you know, things like that, right? I believe that it's very similar in some ways to the story that we started off our whole show with, where a fair amount of focus is being put on what potential victims can do to protect themselves. And that is helpful advice. But is there enough that's also being looked at in terms of ensuring that the spaces that are being occupied are safe? And when it comes to the internet and the wild, wild west that it is, I think it's tough. It's just really, really difficult because people might not be here. People might not be locals. It's just so difficult to monitor and keep track of these things.
And to add that layer of the thing that we're talking about today, the non-physical crime, right? Because when it comes to the sexual targeting of children, of course, there's a lot of concern in terms of the kind of harm that can come a child's way. But when we talk about a non-physical crime, because we're talking about the sharing of a photo, we're talking about a conversation that may not, at the face of it, to a child, feel damaging, but in the long term, could expose them to behaviors that are unhealthy and unsafe. So there's so much here that needs to be communicated clearly, but also is difficult to detect from one text or one conversation. So yeah, I completely agree that while we need to be thinking about how we can teach our kids these healthy boundaries and how to protect themselves online, that a larger look at what needs to be done is also really important. All of which to say, we are talking about what seems to be an increase in terms of sexual crimes online that don't involve physical contact. And we'd like to hear from you. How do you cultivate strong boundaries online? How can we help children do that? You can call us 7733 2900, send us a voice note or WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be speaking with Dathan P.H. Wong, child rights activist and director of Childline Foundation. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9. Joining us now on the line is Dathan P.H. Wong, child rights activist and director at Childline Foundation. Dathan, good to have you with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me on the day.
So let's talk about the definition of non-physical sexual crimes. What does that phrase encompass?
It's a wide range. It covers a whole range of including cyberbullying and a lot of emotional abuse happens also online. A lot of children are downloading porn and, of course, sharing of pictures, sexual images is happening. So that's actually very worrying, especially if you know that one in three internet users are children and that 92% of students between ages of 13 and 17 have social media accounts. And out of that, 92% of them have used the internet and 91% actually access it through their phone. That's a lot. And that's why I think parents need to be aware that they need to teach their children to be resilient online. There's no way you could police them if they're on their phone.
In your experience, have you also been seeing an increase in concerns around online pornography and the sharing of pictures, which you mentioned earlier?
Yes, definitely. We are getting some cases especially where children are sharing images, sexual images, and the worrying part is some of it is self-generated. That means they have been either groomed online over a period of time. If you look at the child the report coming in from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, the cyber tip line, Malaysia, since before COVID, we had about 183,000 reports of suspected child sexual exploitation. And now it's gone up to 2020, it went up to 203,000. So that's a lot of materials, suspected child sexual abuse materials, includes enticement, includes extortion, includes child sex trafficking. And it also, it's a whole range. I think we should be worried about what's happening.
So the rise of these crimes have basically been attributed to a number of things. Internet access, which children now have, specifically internet access, which children now have at a younger age. What advice do you have for parents in terms of how to guide their children on internet use?
First of all, I think there's no way you could watch your kids all 100% of the time or even 50% of the time. So you need to be able to help children understand how the connected world works and how they can provide their personal information. And that's really critical, what they can share and what they cannot share. They need to learn about the kind of, dangers that are out there, the harms that can happen out there. Of course, there are things like password protect devices and parental controls. But again, children do know how to get around some of these. Again, the other thing that parents could do is really listen to your children and engage with them in terms of their understanding of how the internet works. The other thing is a lot of what you do offline and online, what you teach your children, for example, to be kind, to be able to make good choices. They need to be able to, first of all, explore together with the parents on good content. And then later on is under supervision, but later on they can be independent, once they build the resilience and they know what is right and wrong, what they can and cannot download, right? So I think it's very important to also, the other thing is extremely important is to keep communications between your child and yourself open so that they will come to you. In the our lives online and in the workshops we have with children, we have been told by children that say two people that they don't really want to go to if they are in trouble on online issues is actually the school counselor or the parent. The first person they go to will be their friend. So that's not very good because those are the two people that they should trust to come to, right? Mm. So basically that's what's happening with our children.
And part of what was raised by Siti Kamsia Hassan of the Sexual Women and Child Investigation Division is that predators are establishing relationships with children, which is what leads to that sharing of photos and videos and so on. And it's worrying, right?
Yeah.
What needs to go into helping children understand what a healthy and safe relationship is, both online and offline?
Yeah, okay. I think the figures that show about even the global trend is basically mostly it is girls, and even then it's girls 11 to 13 years old who are most vulnerable, and it's understandable because their bodies are changing and they're not mature enough yet. So I think it's very important from very young, when the children are even in preschool and all that, is for parents to teach them what is safe and what is not safe, and what they feel uncomfortable with, then they should refer to a trusted adult. The other thing is, of course, to have conversations with the children about what's happening. If there's a case, we have had several cases. So if there's a case that comes in the newspaper that's got to do with, online abuse or online scams and also pornography and stuff like, do take that as a conversation with your children. And when things go wrong, then you must be able to tell your children what to do. So that's basically it, yeah.
Are there certain aspects that might make children more vulnerable to non-physical sexual crimes, whether it's their age or their background, perhaps?
I think it cuts across. It's not just children who are. It's also across the board in terms of rural children in rural areas. Even plantation kids all have access to internet, more or less, so they are vulnerable. With those who are in the urban areas, of course, they have more access. And therefore, if they don't have people, teachers and parents talking to them about being safe online, then of course they are vulnerable. But generally, it is important for both schools and parents to teach the children about online safety.
So overall, what is the best way to address this issue, right? Without it seeming as if we're infringing on their privacy or violating their trust? Because for some, the first move is going to be limiting or banning their access to the internet.
Yeah, that's not the solution to ban them, right? Because they do need, the internet is very good, right? Because they do need to do their work and their homework, and they get to know about a lot of things about how the world works, right? So I would say that you need to build resilience. You need to be able to also tell children what to do if they do come across, things that make them uncomfortable. And then, for example, stop the communication with whoever is, bullying them or, the perpetrator. Tell somebody who is trusted, and take screenshots and record the communications, try to block the person and report. There are several places that you can report to, we can give you that list in terms of the, of course, it's the cyber tip line in MCMC. And there is, of course, you can call up 1599 Target Cafe, and they would refer them to the right people to manage it.
Now, with the nature of these sorts of non-physical crimes, one thing that might happen is that kids might find themselves afraid or uncomfortable when it comes to asking for help. What steps can be taken to ensure that victims have easier access to help? And what can be done to make this process less daunting?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things that we have when we lack at the moment is a confidential child helpline for children to call when they need help. Right now, it needs to be a dedicated helpline where children know that they will be listened to, they will not be judged. We do have a Malaysian portal where if children do see or adults do see sexual images or any form of images and videos online that they're uncomfortable with, they can report to our IWF portal, and this will be taken down within the next 24 hours.
On the parent side of things, what kind of signs can they be looking for when it comes to children who might be victims of non-physical sexual crimes?
Usually the first sign is they're very secretive. They will try to hide what they're doing online. They may show some behavior problem. So really, parents need to know, be watchful of how the children are behaving in terms of, their day-to-day, whether they are upset, whether they are, suddenly they've gone quiet, they are not really, or they're not sleeping well, things like that. So they are already signs for help. So those things need to be addressed.
So it strikes me that one of the challenges with this is that from the children's point of view, they are not just uncomfortable with what might have happened, but they might be worried about getting in trouble themselves, particularly if at the early stages of, whatever interaction they've had, they've perhaps done something they shouldn't have, or, they went against something their parents told them to do and so on. How can this be navigated? How can children be given the confidence that even if you made a mistake, you should come forward and talk about it?
Yeah, there are certain key messages that a child needs to hear, either from a parent or an adult who they go to. One is, I believe in you. You are brave for telling me about this. I want to help you to be safe. What happened is not okay. What happened is not your fault. Sorry, my voice is going a bit.
No, that's okay.
It's basically telling the child you're not alone, and then you're here for them, and you will support them no matter what, and you will not judge them. That's what the child needs, for somebody to hold their hand and get them through this.
Dathin Wong, what would you like to leave us with?
The internet is here to stay, and I think it's extremely important that parents themselves learn about data and privacy, about how to negotiate in terms of the children's safety. We also know that we have also children who are actually running workshops on data science with other children. So the more knowledge you give your child in terms of how to be safe on the online, the better off they are in terms of being resilient and being able to handle when they need something like this.
Dathin Wong, thanks for speaking with us today. That was Dathin P.H. Wong, child rights activist and director at Childline Foundation, weighing in on this issue of non-physical, non-physical sexual crimes that happen online. Let us know, how do you cultivate strong boundaries online? And how can we help children do that? You can call 7733 2900, send us a voice note or WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:39. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And we're talking about the rising number of non-physical sexual crimes that happen online towards children specifically, and essentially concerns over how frequent this is happening, particularly given that the internet is such a presence in our lives right now.
Yeah, so when we say non-physical sexual crimes, right, it really does cover a wide gamut, which our guest talked about earlier as well, but it includes things like online pornography, children being exposed to online pornography, or inadvertently participating in the creation of these sorts of images because they're approached by people, they're approached by predators basically, who forge a relationship with them and eventually ask them for these sorts of images and photos and then distribute it. So when we talk about online sexual crimes that don't involve physical touch, it's a lot, right? Because even in that description, there are things like coercion,
yes,
that enter the picture.
And grooming, and a sort of a step-by-step process of exploitation of kids online. Essentially, we're talking about what we could be doing to make sure that our children are safe. Let us know, how do you cultivate strong boundaries online, and how can we help children do that? You can call 7733 2900, send us a voice note or WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
So I think that it's important also to draw a generational difference, because a lot of the children who are currently growing up online, and I use that advisedly, have never been exposed to anything, to a world without the internet. I'm not saying necessarily that it was a safer world for children before this. There were always ways for predators. There were always measures that had to be taken to keep ourselves and children safe. But online, of course, does all the things that we know it does. It exposes everybody to a wider range of people. It exposes people to a wider range of people at all times of the day and night in any geographical location. So, generationally speaking, I sometimes wonder whether people our age, you and I, Sharmila, people older than us, are equipped to talk to and about the internet to people who have never known anything but the internet and its etiquette. Because we asked a question to our guest earlier about the difference, how to know that you are building a safe and healthy relationship with someone. And I can't help but think that for children who have had very little exposure to anything but their parents over the last couple of years, and almost every other social interaction would have happened online, that distinction must be even blurrier.
That's an excellent point. I think the other thing, of course, is that when you have only known, or not only known, but when you're largely so comfortable with communicating via text, voice message, whatever, without physical presence, whether your ability also to gauge what's safe and not safe could be very different from those of us raised to think about proximity, for instance, physical proximity, or to say things like, don't give someone your address. Those things are a lot more clear-cut than don't give someone your Instagram handle, because it exists in a very different space. And for a younger person who's never known anything else, well, but why not? It's public anyway.
And we were discussing this earlier, right, off air with our team and our colleagues. And we were discussing how people might get exposed to predators. And one thing that, again, is worth saying is that I think Instagram and TikTok are the avocado toast and Starbucks of the internet, in that everybody likes to say, you know, if you just restricted your time on social media, that it would all be fine. But YouTube is also a social media. Games are also a way in which people meet and interact. And games aren't all bad, right? There are some games that are touted for their educational qualities. In other words, people are lurking in, and I don't want to fearmonger, but it really isn't just social media. When we talk about making friends or forging connections online, they happen in a variety of spaces and then get taken to a different space, right? So you meet somewhere and then the messaging happens elsewhere, which again makes the monitoring tricky.
So we've been asking you for your thoughts. Do keep them coming. How do you cultivate strong boundaries online? How can we help children do the same? You can call 777-332-900, send us a voice note or WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We do have this voice note from Sanjay.
I think for kids, to cultivate this kind of culture for kids, I think parents can allow the kids to go online, but to be close enough to the kids to know what they're doing online, and as well maybe setting down some boundaries on time limits and who they are watching online with.
Thank you for that, Sanjay. I mean, I think those are some great baseline tips. Time limits is a good one. Knowing who they're talking to. And I just wanted to add on the point of along that point of something our guest said earlier. So Dathin Wong basically talked about how it's important for the child to know that they were right to come forward if something feels wrong. It's important for the child to know that they're safe, that they're not going to be blamed.
And that you're always in their corner was something
yes,
she said too.
Yes, yeah. So all of these things in terms of knowing who you're speaking to, I think in the end, the child also needs to know that they are allowed to do the things that give them joy or fun or whatever, but that they have someone in their corner who will care for them. And it's often when there's a disconnect between that, that these conversations become more difficult.
Well, frankly, it's also whether or not parents are able to comfortably have conversations about sex, right?
Yes.
Because and not necessarily always couch it in terms of, is that your friend? What does, And just because you can't always talk about good touch, bad touch, boundaries, or why those things are dangerous if you also aren't comfortable speaking to your child frankly about sex. And so alongside opening up those lines of communication, I think building, what's the word, that capacity in yourself is also important.
Well, Dahlia says, I don't think parents should outright restrict their children from using social media. I feel like that'll cause them to get even more curious and maybe rebel against their parents and go on the internet anyway. I agree with the guest that it's important to have open conversations with children about sex, consent, the kinds of dangers that exist on the internet. Also, having open discussions with them would encourage them to trust you, and it's important to be someone that they can turn to.
Yes, which is, again, what we've been trying to get at, right? Firstly, the open lines of communication. Secondly, not treating the internet like an alien space, but instead accepting that this is just part and parcel now of what it means to raise a kid or to be a person in 2022, whether you like it or not, sadly.
So let us know, how do you cultivate strong boundaries online? How can we help children do that? And if you're a parent, if you'd like to share your own experiences having these conversations with your kids, we'd love to hear them. You can call 7733 2900, send us a voice note, or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back after this for more of your messages. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9. It's 6:48. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn, and we're talking about child safety online within the context of non-physical sexual crimes, which are occurring more frequently. And so we're asking you, how do you cultivate strong boundaries online? How can we help children do that? And if you're a parent, you'd like to share your own experiences having conversations around online safety, consent, and sex with your kids, please share your thoughts with us as well. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp, or send us a voice note 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. We do have Munif saying, this is twisted from the Jurassic Park quote, predators find a way. Child safety in the context of the internet is a nightmare topic, for the internet is truly a cesspool. My little cousin literally just Google image searched The Incredibles, and unsavory stuff is mixed in with the results. One of the few topics that I can't even begin to speculate a solution for. I just wanted to say good luck to all current and aspiring parents. 'Tis the double-edged sword of a borderless world.
So this point about Google image, and, well, not just Google image alone, but doing random searches and finding things that you were ill-prepared for is such a real one. And especially in this context, if you don't have child protection, right, labeled, or like if you don't have those sorts of, what's the word I'm looking for? Filters?
Yes. Yeah.
If you don't have the filters applied to your searches, maybe because you didn't know that your kid was going to use your phone that day or whatever, then absolutely, this is how things happen. My first exposure to online pornography happened because I was a fan of the Spice Girls. And I was looking up photos of them and encountered at the time pictures of Jerry Halliwell, which were taken before she was a Spice Girl. You remember there was like huge uproar at the time. But that's what happened. And that was, I think, a very rude way to come to something that has become so ubiquitous. And I guess I wish that I'd had a better primer of what to look out for.
Well, Ellie says, there's this music song game that I play online, where they line up songs and you win by guessing the correct song the fastest. And you're paired off with strangers from all over the world. Some of them, if not most, were children. I could tell this from their pictures. The game felt so innocent, but there was this older guy from another country who started talking to me. At first, it was just about music, but it turned to more conversations, and he lived in another country. So he started telling me about his life there. He showed me pictures, which I was interested in. Eventually, he started asking me what I was wearing. I'm older, so I knew to block him. But thinking about this man being on this app that was played by children was so concerning.
This, again, it's why we were talking earlier about games, right? Because mm-hmm. this really is, I mean, that sounds horrible. Partly because, of course, that is a game that sounds like it would be appealing to children. And there, I go back again to YouTube and how it's been a little bit of a well-documented phenomenon that you can start with educational kindergarten content. And because of the algorithm and because of the way the whole thing works. Before you know it, you're looking at something or you're engaging in something that is well above your age bracket. And that's one example, right? But in this context, it's something that understandably children would want to participate in. And to know that people might be lurking is concerning.
Yeah. Let's see. We have a voice note. This is from Sarah.
I think to set boundaries or to create strong boundaries for children is to first help them understand what is good touch and bad touch, and try to ingrain in them what loving touch is and versus something that is more violent, that has no consent. And then from there, I don't know whether it's too simplistic to think of it in this way, but from there, it would be easier for children to not be harmed by videos like this, by substance like this, when they encounter it and they are able to click away, or if they do watch it, they are not drawn to do the same or drawn to express interest in it as well. To me, boundaries are a lot about exposure, and only through exposure can you convince somebody to set boundaries for themselves.
So many good points there, Sarah. Thank you. Sarah got me thinking about what is the equivalent of the good touch, bad touch within an online, non-physical context, right? Because there need to be things that you can teach your children. You know, this is a boundary that shouldn't be crossed. This is a line that you should watch out for. This is a thing that should make you uncomfortable and you should come to me. And I feel like, once again, with the lack of physical markers, this becomes a lot more difficult to say, because I think we also need to keep in mind that the people on the other side of it, the predators, are often incredibly skilled at creating these connections and conversations.
Absolutely. The lack of physical cues is a really good point. I think also in general, it's very difficult to talk about social contexts online, I think. And it also varies depending on who or where your child might meet these people. And on top of that, there's also, just all of it, I think, is so tough. But what I'm taking away is that having those conversations and keeping the lines of communication open, and this is across the board, this has come through in every message, is so, so important here.
We have, Dilly Deli saying, I'll try not to restrict my kids too much, but I do try to establish trust with them so that they know they can come to me if they have uncomfortable questions or if they're unsure about something. I've done all I can to ensure that they're going in with the right knowledge on what to look for, but I don't think hovering over them while they're online will help keep them safe. Dilly, thank you for that. And you know, I would actually really appreciate hearing from parents. If you'd like to share how you navigate these conversations, keep them coming. You can call us, you can WhatsApp us, you can send us a voice note, you can tweet us. On that note, we do have a voice note from Anwar.
So it is very challenging for parents like me to make sure that my kids are safe online. Like, for example, I have two kids. I mean, four in total, but two kids right now that is always constantly online, especially on weekends, because that is when I give them the opportunity to use my phone. So what happened is that they watch YouTube and even YouTube Kids, and sometimes playing games like Roblox and PKXD. And then I realized that some of the games are not suitable with them, with like these gore images, but in a kid's way, you know, like cutting fingers and heads and something. So I decided to intervene to stop them. And I mentioned that I don't like this kind of thing because of what. And then I realized that it's actually a trend right now in Malaysia where many kids are watching the same thing that they watch. And so what I did is that I give them a sort of alternative games that is much safer. I mean, you know, shooting robots is much better than watch people killing people, even though they say it's not real. They say it's pixelate, but it is still enforce the same thing. So it is quite dangerous right now, and I'm even getting worried now what happened when they are a bit bigger and they start to use online social media and everything else. It really gets me worried, and I hope I can go through it in a positive manner.
Anwar, thank you so much for those thoughts. A lot of good advice there. Also, and I think quite realistically, a lot of concerns, because this is kind of uncharted waters for most of us.
Yes, and yet there's a clear takeaway, right? Shooting robots, good. I mean, that's what I got. Like, if you need to steer your children away from where all their friends might be or the popular games, when in doubt, shooting robots. But I mean, in all seriousness, Anwar, it just sounds like you're doing such a great job. And those, like you said earlier, Shamila, great tips.
We have Benji saying, it is a double-edged sword. We can wait for companies and the government to add more controls, but we are really just giving away our freedom. The proper solution is educating your own kids and monitoring their use. If parents are hands-off and leaving it to the internet, don't complain. Stranger danger talk for kids of the internet age.
So, Benji, I agree with you in terms of adding more controls. I do think, though, having more education and awareness raised without the stigmatization of, oh, you sent a photo to someone, is so key. And that if parents and children knew conclusively that the law would protect them, right, and you had education in that vein, then maybe stepping forward wouldn't seem so daunting, aside from the fact that there is all this stigma still attached anyway.
Keep those thoughts coming. How do you cultivate strong boundaries online? How can we help children do that? You can call us 7733 2900, send us a voice note or WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. If you're a parent, you'd like to share with us your experiences on navigating these waters, send those through as well. We'll get back to some of your messages after this, so keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Banish fraudulent maneuvers, BFM 89.9.
Just to look back at messages we've been getting for our inside story, where we were discussing non-physical sexual crimes targeting children online, and we've been asking you for your thoughts. A number of interesting points have been coming through. So Munif is adding on to a previous message and responding to us talking about the difficulty with physical cues, and says, the lack of physical cues is a real headache. I joined Mercy Malaysia once on a program to help Bangladeshi children who were sexually abused. The biggest hurdle is that even those who dare to make a report on abuse to begin with will have difficulty reporting what happened, as they have no clear words for private parts, as it's a big taboo. So the predators are having a field day, not only getting away with it, but instigating it within that shroud of vagueness.
Yeah. I mean, I think that time and time again, we hear about the lack of specificity being a problem, right? Mm. And I'm sorry, it's broken record at this point, but being frank and building in conversations about safety, about good touch, about boundaries, about sex from an early age is a way to get around this, or is a way to circumvent it.
We also have Valerie saying, how to equip kids for the internet? Through education, of course. They need to be equipped with common sense and street smarts when they're online. Kids need to know that there are weird, crazy people in the world, and that these people can find you on the internet, on social media, and so on. Parents and guardians need to have open and honest conversations with their kids about how to respect their bodies, privacy, consent, and to know what is safe, not safe. Back in the day, parents would tell kids not to talk to strangers or take candy from strangers. It's pretty much the same type of good advice for kids online.
Yeah, I agree with that. We've also got Chris, who says, you know, these sorts of stories, predators are also making it difficult for adults to interact with kids. Like Mr. Bean making funny faces and playing with a child when bored on a plane is a no-no nowadays. You can see fear in the eyes of the parents and dirty looks from onlookers.
So a couple of things about that, right? The thing is, I agree that actually now these complexities become a little bit more tough for well-meaning adults. On the other hand, I think some of the problem is that we also don't take kids seriously enough when they say, I don't want to hug that uncle at the party. I don't want to be kissed by this person.
I think if a child says that, that's consent. We should honour it.
Yeah, I agree with that. Similarly, if you're trying to play with a child and the child looks away, there isn't necessarily a need to persist.
Yeah.
But Chris, broadly, I see where you're coming from. And I think particularly for... This is particularly true of men, I think, that it has become more difficult to interact with children and also people of the opposite sex.
Just to close off, we have this voice note from Balan.
Hi, good evening. I'm Balan from Suramban. My point of view, we need to educate our kids. We cannot restrict them from using the internet. As we all know, we are living in a digital era. We cannot avoid the usage of internet. Whenever our kids are browsing a video or playing games, as a parent, what we can do after they play, they use the gadgets, we can browse their history and see what they went through. And let's say if the history is clear, that means something wrong has happened. So the parents need to be alert. So we cannot restrict them, but we can advise them, we can teach them, we can guide them, we can tell them what is right, what is wrong. This type of conversation will lead to where this type of video is good to watch or not to watch, and why it's not suitable to watch. I think when we getting closer to our kids, it will be more better than we be more strict with them. Thank you.
Balan, really, I think that's the takeaway message right there, that really the closer you are with your children, the more open you are in having these conversations, the easier it will be to make sure that they're safe, because you know that you're going to be the first person they come to if something should go wrong. Keep those thoughts coming. You can call us, you can send us a voice note, you can WhatsApp us, you can tweet us. So keep it here, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.